You're listening to the Monica Cade Podcast, a conscious approach to all things health and lifestyle, empowering you to be your best self in each moment. Because the truth is, that's all we ever have. From conscious lifestyle tips that'll help you make better choices in all areas of your life, through to interviews with game-changing entrepreneurs, creative minds, and thought leaders. These conversations move me. They're changing the world, and I hope they impact yours. So, without further ado, let's dive into this week's conversation.
Welcome to episode 107 of the Monica Cade Podcast. My very talented guest today is Katie Sackhoff, who is an American actress who grew up in Portland, Oregon. She's best known for playing Lieutenant Kara Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica, a show which nominated her for 4 Saturn Awards and where she won the award for Best Supporting Actress on television. You may also recognize her from The Fearing Mind, TV series Bionic Woman, Nip, Tuck, CSI Crime Scene Investigation, and Star Wars, The Clone Wars, and Netflix series Longmire and The Flash, along with her newest Netflix series, Another Life, which we'll be talking about later today. She's had lead roles in many other films to add to the mix, but what inspired me to invite Katie on the show was her humble approach to her craft, her willingness to keep going when things get tough, and her vulnerability to share her life learning so openly. Let's welcome her to the conversation. Hi, Katie. Thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I thought we could start our conversation by giving our listeners a bit of insight into your life growing up and what you wanted to pursue as a career at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when I grew up in a really small town in Portland, Oregon, called St. Helens, like just outside Portland, Oregon. And my family then relocated to Portland when I was probably in junior high school. And I was always a swimmer, you know, that's what I was. I was quite good at it. And, you know, the plan was for me to go to college and swim in college with a scholarship. And that was just sort of like my path. You know, I think that when you're good at something, when you're younger, people just assume that's what you're going to do. And so that was sort of my path. And then when I was about 15, I got hurt and sort of really had to reevaluate what I wanted out of my life at such a young age, because I'd never really thought about it before. And my parents really helped to, at that point, direct me, almost out of that slap on the butt. They just wanted me to get out of the house. You know, they were slightly fearful that I was going to fall into a depression after I had been hurt. And so they got me out of the house by having me go and pursue film and television. I got very lucky in the beginning of my career, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And then I think I was just too stubborn to realize it should be tough. Or it was tough, you know?
I'll just backtrack a little bit. So when you, injured yourself, what did you feel like your life was over at that point in time, because you had mentally prepared yourself that you were going into this career of swimming?
Absolutely. I mean, I think when you're 16 and anything like that happens to you, it does feel like your life is over. I mean, you know, you get a pimple on your face and it feels like your life is over, you know? So it, to me, it was, you know, so many of my friends and my life were at swimming. You know, I swam twice a day and, you know, worked out with my team. I was always there. And to then have that sort of taken away, it very much so felt like my life was over. I sort of started all over again. I had friends at school, but I spent so much time swimming that it never crossed my mind that that wouldn't be something that I could do.
Mm. And did you have an interest in film and TV, or did your parents, how did they choose that for you to go into next?
I always did. I always wanted to perform. I didn't know in sort of what context that was going to be, or what the sort of medium would be. But I always loved performing. And when I was really little, just telling crazy stories and being the center of attention was always something that I enjoyed. But when you're from a small town, it's really hard to believe that something that seems so fantastical is a possibility for yourself. And so I didn't even realize that it was an option, mm-hmm. you know? At that point in my life, I thought that someone would either find me walking down the street and I would just magically snap my fingers and be in a movie, or that, you know, you had to know somebody in the business. That was really all I'd heard of. So it was something that I was interested in, but I would have never known where to start had my mom not actually, she saw an ad in a paper to be Kirsten Dunst's body double in a Lifetime movie. And I went down to see if I could do that. And I didn't match her body well enough. I think I was a few inches taller than her. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me if I would want to audition for a role in the movie. I did, and I got the part. And then that got me into the union. And the director of that movie convinced my mom to bring me to LA and introduced me to my manager and my agent. So it was very, like I said, I was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it sounds like you were, and it definitely seems like it happened quite quickly, because, you know, you often hear these different stories, or, you know, when actors talk about their beginning experiences and they're so varied and so different. When you got the role, what did that feel like for you, especially being so young as well?
I don't really remember, to be honest. I mean, it was so long ago. I remember being, every single time that I've booked a job in my life felt like a milestone.
Sure.
And I remember celebrating that moment, but not sitting in it too long. Mm-hmm. I never really sort of lived in successes too long. I pushed through very quickly and set my sights on something beyond what I had attained. Mm. And I think that probably started at 17. I'm sure I was also completely nervous. I've always believed that somebody would find me out and I didn't belong there. I still think that. I think I was very intimidated at the time, but I was also, I call it the blissful ignorance of youth a lot. Mm-hmm. But I also had, probably an unrealistic amount of confidence at that time in my career or in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I was 16, and up till that point, my life had been pretty easy. You know, my life with my parents at home had been pretty easy. I'd never really had a lot of obstacles to get through it up until that point. So it never occurred to me that it was a big win, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so then after that film, did you find that that's when the reality of what the industry was like set in? That, well, I guess, you know, it just didn't kind of necessarily mean that you were going to get every single audition?
Yeah, well, that set in as soon as I got to LA. You know, I moved to Los Angeles about a year later, and I remember someone telling me that I would book one out of every 50 auditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, 50, that's crazy. But then I embraced that wholeheartedly, and I started marking the auditions on my calendar and to get to 50, because the goal was, these aren't failures, they're just steps on the ladder to get to 50, because if I can get to 50, I'll book a job.
Yeah.
And I booked one before 50. You know, I booked one at about month 4 in Los Angeles. And it was a small guest star role on Zoe Duncan, Jack and Jane with Selma Blair. That was my first job. And I remember celebrating that one because that felt big to me. That felt important. Like, I can call my mom and dad because I'm going to be okay. That one felt big. I remember I was in the bathtub and I got the phone call, and it was so not even a big deal that my manager didn't even tell me. His assistant told me. But to me, it was the most important job I ever got. So
it's interesting that you said, you know, you got out a calendar and you started marking off the 50. Because to me, hearing that, it feels like you have a certain type of mindset when you, with, I guess, I mean, we're talking about your career right now with how you approach things. Do you feel like it's your mindset that supported you to approach it in that way? Because so many people could hear that and be so discouraged by it. Whereas I feel like you flipped it.
Yeah, I do think that I flipped it. But I think that when somebody gives you a roadmap to success, you can't help but look at that and go, well, at least I know what's going to happen now. You know, for me, it was, okay, 50. Awesome. At least I know.
Yeah.
At least I have a number to shoot for. You know, if somebody tells me that something's going to be hard, to me, that means, oh, okay, great. It's hard for everyone. It's not going to be easy. Let's buckle down and get it done. You know, it's to me when the things are meant to be easy and they're hard for me, that's when I fall apart. Like math is really hard for me and I fall apart. I see numbers and I just completely fall apart. And that to me is frustrating.
Yeah. I can relate with you on that one.
Yeah.
Like my brain freezes. It's like, what's going on?
I know. I feel like I'm like, almost dyslexic with numbers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting thing. But, you know, if you can give me an obstacle that I've got to get through and success is on the other side, I'm very good at obstacles.
Yeah.
And that is to me what that 50 auditions represented was, these are just obstacles. Let's just push forward.
Yeah. Amazing. And so along your journey or your career, have you had moments where you wanted to throw in the towel and give up?
Yes. Yeah. And those moments are, oddly enough, between series. They're not the struggle of, I haven't booked a job yet. They are the struggle of, I've been unemployed for 6 months. Oh my God. And you know, cause they always say things like, an actor's job can be this one could be their last one or something like that. And it's hard in this business and in any business to not manifest the things that people put on us as a reality for ourselves. You know, those are the hard times though. You know, if I was going to right now, I've been unemployed for 9 months. This is one of the longest times that I've been unemployed in my entire career. And you, in these times, it is hard not to panic because you've heard all of these things over the course of your career, of a woman's career is over at 40, you know, this may be your last job. It always gets harder the older you get. All of these things that have sort of been projected upon myself and my career and other actors and other people in any industry. It's hard when things do slow down a little bit to not go, oh God, this is it. And you really have to sort of, work to stay busy and positive and also then find different outlets for your creativity.
And how do you navigate that for yourself? So is it kind of just immersing yourself in, you know, like different creative outlets? Is it not letting your mind go there? What are some of the things that you do?
Well, I just try to stay busy. You know, I've learned, you know, as I get older, that life is very, very short. If you're having fun. And so time passes very quickly. And to me, a year is, it's a blink of an eye, really. And so I try not to focus on the actual time and just on what I've done during that time. It's finding things and that I enjoy doing, like the YouTube channel and finding creative outlets for myself that way and spending time with the people that I love, because when I'm working, I don't get that luxury. You know, I mean, the first 15 years of my career, 20 years of my career, I've been on location almost the entire time. There, you know, there's not a lot of careers. There are some, but there are not a lot of careers where you're away from home all the time. And so when I am unemployed, it does feel like a beautiful gift almost to be able to spend time with people that I love.
Yeah, that sounds so lovely. Are you also a homebody, or do you quite?
Yes, I love being at home. I love being at home. I love being like by myself, and I can hermit out pretty easily.
Mm, yeah. You mentioned your YouTube channel, and I know you did a 72-hour no technology challenge a little while ago.
Yeah.
So what was that experience like? What did you, I mean, for our listeners, like, you just went no technology for 72 hours.
Yeah. So what possessed me to be so insane? It's funny because people, you know, there were a lot of naysayers that said things like, well, just go camping. You know, we go camping as a family every, you know, month, and we don't have our phones. It's very easy to go without technology when you're on vacation.
Totally.
It is difficult to be without your phone and advanced electronics when you're home trying to work. Mm. It's virtually impossible. People don't know how to get a hold of you. I didn't know how to get to certain places in my car because I couldn't use the GPS. Now, I did have the electronics in my car, and I did have the cameras that I was using, and I did have my house phone. But other than that, that was it. You know, I didn't use anything else. And it was on day one, I took my phone with me because that was part of it, that I could have my phone just in case there was an emergency. And very quickly on day two, I left my phone at home.
Mm.
And didn't bring it with me again for 2 days. So it to me, it was like this beautiful reset to remind ourselves how distracted we are from the things that are vitally important to community and to our health and our mental health. And for myself, I noticed a very big shift in confidence, even in just 2 days, not being sort of bombarded with the highlight reel of other people's lives on social media made my life more pleasurable. Mm. And I think that we can all benefit from that, you know, especially our children, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a huge thing. I was even pondering on the aspect of social media just recently. And I was just really looking at, you know, like, why do we do this? And what is it that as a collective, we seem to be getting out of this? And obviously there are so many beautiful parts just having social media and how much it's connected us globally. But also what I noticed is that often depending on what people post, it's like beneath the surface, there's this real desire to connect to people. Essentially, that's what it so is. And yet we all want to connect so much, yet we're so disconnected and we're doing it through a screen rather than doing it in real life. And there was a bit of, I guess, sadness with that. And I was just thinking, like, why can, and I'm not saying nobody does this, you know, I'm just kind of generalizing, but
yeah,
why can't we connect with people in the same way that we connect through them through the phone? It's strange.
Well, it's, and those are the things that I realized, you know, I realized very quickly that I didn't have as much connection to my friends daily, weekly that I thought I did, you know, because I see their faces on social media. My brain tells me that I've connected with them. And I started to realize that it was incredibly important to actually, you know, spend quality time with people face to face, you know, and now technology gives us the luxury and to actually connect face to face with people that live in different countries now, which is beautiful. And I find that, you know, I've got friends that live in New Zealand and Australia, and I find that if you FaceTime with them or if you Skype with them, it connects you so much more deeply because you have to be present. You can't be wandering around doing other things at the same time.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I think there are so many beautiful aspects. Like even now we wouldn't be able to have this podcast and
right.
we also like saw each other before. So it was like, we wouldn't be able to do that if we didn't have all this amazing technology.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so technology has given us so many positive things, but it is also hurt us, I think, very much. And I think it's only getting worse.
It's interesting. Years ago, I did an interview with someone and I asked a question about social media and he said to me, it's the phone's not the problem. It's whether you're using the phone or if the phone is using you. And it really stuck with me. And I was like, it's so true. And I think that's the differentiation. It's like, is your social media or technology consumption mindful or is it unconscious?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, and that's the same thing with any addiction, right? It becomes an addiction when it's got control over you and you don't have control anymore.
Mm. All right. I want to find out when you're acting, when you're playing different roles, what is it? How do you feel embodying these different characters?
I got into acting and wanted to pursue this more because I enjoyed as a child escaping from my reality and becoming other people. It was really fun for me to imagine that I could be so many different things. And it became this outlet for my wild imagination as a child. It still does the same thing for me. You know, I mean, I have dreams as if I have been these people. And it is the most interesting thing for me because it feels like I've lived 100 lifetimes already, as other people, you know, and I just, it's such a gift to sort of lose yourself in somebody else's reality.
Mm. Do you feel that when you're working on a particular project and you are a certain character during that period of time, aside from the dreaming as well, do you feel that filters out into your daily life or are you very clear about keeping it separate?
There are certain things. I do tend to become my characters a little bit while I'm working. There was a part of me that became a little too Starbuck-like like 15 years ago. But I also learned so much from playing her and embodying her for so many years. And one of the things that she did so well was she had this fierce honesty and she would say whatever was on her mind. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I emulated and learned from her. And it's such an important, you know, part of who I am now, just that sort of constant honesty with people.
Do you feel like through these characters, you also, I guess, deepen the connection with yourself and explore other aspects of yourself? You know how, you know, different people might find it through yoga or they might find it through sports or different things like that. Do you feel like you find yourself through the acting?
I think that it opens up your mind to walk in another person's shoes for a while, whether the person is imaginary or real, to put yourself in somebody else's shoes with their hardships and their thought process and their beliefs. You can't help but open your mind and make you question your own beliefs and your own reality, which, you know, I think that everybody should practice more of, you know.
How do you prepare for your characters?
So many different ways. Most of my character work is done in my imagination and in my dreams, in dreaming and daydreaming and thinking out loud and things like that. I'll speak in my characters when I'm alone sometimes, but I don't, you know, I've seen other actors write pages and pages and pages of character backstory and things like that. And I, for so many years, felt like maybe I wasn't working hard enough. And I had a director sit down with me one time and he asked me a myriad of different questions about my character and my character's past and who my character was. Mm. And he said, "See, you've done the work. You just don't write it down." Mm. And I was like, "Oh, all right. Yeah, you're right." And it made me realize that my process is just different than other people. I know, though, that I have found a character when I start to dream as the person. Mm-hmm. And that has been vitally important to me in every role I've ever played. I dream as the character. And I was panicking during Another Life because all through pre-production, I kept saying to our showrunner, Aaron, our creator, "I'm not dreaming as her yet. I don't know how to play this woman if I don't know who she is. How do I become her? I'm going to be faking it," which is, just seems like I don't want to be a fraud. And I was really worried. And I didn't start dreaming as her until the day before I started my first day.
Wow.
It just took me her circumstances in her life are so different than mine. It took me a while to fall into her. But once I did, you know, once I understood her and stopped judging her for her decisions, it became a lot easier.
It's so profound what you're saying. You know, like, I guess what I'm taking from what you're saying is just the reminder that we must kind of listen to ourselves and, you know, go through our own process. It doesn't matter how somebody else approaches something in life, because that's the way that they do it. And we can only be our best by doing things our own way, because we innately know how to approach something, whatever it is that we're doing, like you do with your character.
Yeah. And you never know what someone else is going through. You never know what led them to the place that they're at and the decisions that they're making in their life. And it's really easy to judge somebody for doing something differently than we would have done it, but it's not right. And so I think that with her, I wanted Nico to do what I would do. And I was really very much judging her and her process and who she was. And I had to let that go in order to embrace who she was.
This is a perfect segue, because I wanted to ask you about Another Life. So it's a new Netflix series, sci-fi series. So can you give our listeners just a bit of context about the series and then the role that you play?
Absolutely. So this series takes place in the not too distant future, and an alien artifact lands on Earth, and my character and a group of astronauts are sent out into space to determine the origin of the artifact and determine whether or not it's there to hurt Earth. And I play Nico Breckenridge, who is a soldier and a retired astronaut who is now a teacher. And she is sort of pulled out of retirement to lead this mission to determine what the artifact's origin is. And she's very reluctant, but at the same time, she's craving to go back out into space, I think. That's sort of where we pick up, is just, you know, as they're all waking up out of cryo sleep and realizing that this is not going to be as easy as they thought it would be. You know, the show is... it was so much fun to shoot, because it's not, you know, a lot of people I think expected it to be Battlestar Galactica, because it's a very easy assumption to make with me going back into sci-fi. And I think that people that went in with that expectation were very disappointed. This show is not Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar was very serious and took itself very serious. I say all the time that, you know, I feel these days that everybody wants a TV show to be a metaphor for the human condition. And I sometimes shows are just about aliens and space travel and, you know, explosions in space. sometimes that's all it's about. Like, it doesn't, it's not about religion or politics or, you know, sort of like, you know, the internal struggle. It is just about, you know, let's go see some cool aliens.
Yeah.
and if you can suspend your disbelief and sit back and take the show for what it is, it's an incredibly fun ride. Very much binge-worthy show.
Tell me, so I've started watching the series. I'm kind of at the end of episode 4 at the moment. And seeing, I guess, having seen some of your interviews, not as an actress, but I mean, you know, not acting, and then seeing you on this show, I'm so blown away how badass you are. And your character is, because you're so, and I'm sure our listeners can hear it in your voice, but you're very sweet and very down to earth and very, like, you know, warm and lovely. And your character is like, she's beautiful, but she's also really intense and she's really strong. And I was just like, wow, it's like a huge transformation.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. Oh my God.
Thank you. It's so funny. Someone asked me a while ago what the biggest misconception about myself was. And I said that I think that people think that I'm going to punch them in the face. and I've never intentionally hit anyone in my entire life. So it's, I don't know why these characters are so much fun for me and why they resonate in me so much. I think because when I was growing up, I so desperately wanted to see strong women represented in film and television. And we had less than a handful. I think that, you know, the characters, the strong characters that we have had, a lot of the women now are written very one-dimensional. And I really love taking something that is on paper one thing and making them a completely different thing by bringing in my own vulnerability and insecurity. And so it becomes, they become these sort of like very strong women, but somehow seem relatable. And that's always been fun for me. But it's, they're very far from who I am.
I guess that is the really cool thing about acting. When I think I was acting up until I was like 20, and then, and I can resonate with what you're saying a lot of the time in that sense, because that was a similar experience for myself, you know, to be able to explore those facets of myself or a person that I, that wasn't me and I wouldn't bring to my own daily life. I think it's really fun when you can do that. So I can understand how enjoyable it is for you to play Nico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, she is so much fun, you know, just physically transforming myself into her was so much fun. Mm-hmm. I loved that very much. It was, you know, I'm constantly, I only have the body that I have to work with, you know, and, but I do like to try and change my physical sort of aesthetic enough that I believe myself as these people that I play.
Yeah.
And so like with Riddick, I put on 20 pounds of muscle because all the guys were going to be so big, and every guy they cast was bigger than the last guy. And then you ended on Dave Bautista, and I was like, Jesus, all right. I can't. And I had to abandon my original idea, which was to get lean. And so for this role, I wanted to look almost malnourished in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I wanted to look not too skinny, but malnourished in the sense that she's been in cryo sleep for 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, the cryo tubes are not going to be feeding you McDonald's. They're mm-hmm. going to give you just the amount of nutrients you need to stay alive in perfect ratios. And you're going to wake up probably a little dehydrated. And that's exactly what I, you know, to me, the way that she looks when she comes out of cryo. And that was one of the funnest things, especially as an athlete, it's one of the funnest things to see a physical transformation into a character.
Mm. How do you find the transition from going into a particular physique for a character and then returning back to your own natural physique? Do you find that that's an easy process for you? Do you struggle with it?
It's funny because I was saying to someone the other day that, you know, when I first started acting, was constantly told to lose weight, and I'm the same weight that I am now when I am now, you know, it's shifted, it's muscle, but I'm the same size. I still have a lot of the same clothing from then, you know, like it, and someone asked me when it stopped, and it stopped when I got Starbucks, because people's idea of me changed. My body didn't change. But all of a sudden they went, oh, she's the buff girl from Battlestar Galactica, mm-hmm. not she's the chubby girl on the show with Richard Dreyfuss.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's my body naturally gains like 5 or 6 pounds as soon as I'm done working. Mm-hmm. Because I don't eat as much when I'm working. I find with a full stomach, I don't have the energy to work all day long. Mm-hmm. So I eat less. I always put that weight right back on. And there is a part of me that looks at my body when I'm working and in a very messed up way that is, has a little bit of, you know, this unhealthy body image problem that Hollywood has, that there is a part of me that goes, God, I wish I could just hold on to that body all the time. And my boyfriend said to me the other day, babe, you were starving. I was like, yo, you're right. I forgot. I forgot. Right. So I'm very honest about it because I don't want people to think you know, so many times people will look at like Nico on camera and they will think, you know, that is my natural body. And it's not, you know, I sit 5 to 10 pounds heavier than that. I call it my walking around weight. It's a weight where I get to enjoy food and enjoy some alcohol and really live my fullest life. And when I'm working, it's much more regimented and restricted, which I wouldn't want to live that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find that through your career, you know, you mentioned how Hollywood has this real, I guess, focus on body image and what that is supposed to be like. Do you feel like that has affected you? You seem non-affected by it, but I'm curious to know how it has.
It doesn't really affect me anymore. It did a lot when I was younger. You know, I did a photo shoot with the Battlestar Galactica girls for a magazine years ago. And the wardrobe person picked up a piece of wardrobe and said, give this to the big girl. And everybody just sort of stood there because we thought she meant Trisha, because Trisha is 6 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And she meant me. And it was absolutely, I was flabbergasted that somebody would say that out loud as if it was an okay sort of way of identifying a person. And also that I was a size six. So we need to also understand that that is incredibly unhealthy to be projecting that on myself, on an industry, and on, you know, little girls around the world, that is in some way the big girl, is a really messed up way of thinking. But this industry, it's changing slowly. It's becoming more of a healthy body type that is celebrated now. And, you know, it's something where we need to celebrate a healthy body and not a body that is an extreme in either direction. And that is something that the industry is actually starting to sort of like shift to, but it has affected me. You know, I mean, it's, you know, there are moments when I think about airbrushing my photos on Instagram, and then I decide that I'm not that person. but there is a little struggle to just make my leg a little longer. but I work hard for the body I have, so I have let that go as I've gotten older.
Well, it's so refreshing to hear that perspective and that you're so open and honest about that. Because I think so often it's either kind of glossed over or, you know, people don't really talk about it. But I think our bodies, like, you can look at particular actresses and you can see that they don't look healthy. And I think it's hard then for people who aspire to be like them or other women around the world, particularly, who then, you know, there's that feeling of inadequacy and that striving for something that's not attainable or even healthy.
Yeah. I mean, I know so many actresses that don't eat, and it is not healthy. And I would hate for anyone to think that I'm putting out a negative body image out into the world. And so it's, you know, I don't want that to be a reality. So I'm very honest about it. There's a reason why the health and fitness industry is a billion-dollar industry. You know, everybody's looking for something quick and something that's not painful. Yeah. And the sad truth that I have to tell people at all times is that it's not quick, and there is no pill, and it's going to hurt. You know, being physically fit and having a healthy weight is not fun at all times. You know, I mean, there are times that I would love to eat more food that is not good for me, but I know that that's not healthy for me. And there are times when I can skip meals, and I also know that is not healthy for me. So there, something right in the middle is usually the healthiest thing.
I found over my own personal journey, like with food and training and all those kinds of things, is that, I mean, I love, this is going to sound funny, I love the pain. I love working out. I love, you know, pushing myself. I also have very many moments where I'm just like, I don't want to do this. And I think as I've gotten older, I've also relaxed into myself. So I know, I think there's, I don't know, maybe you feel this way too, but something changes inside you where you don't feel the need that you need to uphold a particular image. You kind of go for what you know you want to look like that feels good but maintains a healthy relationship with your mind, body, and spirit.
Right. Well, I also think that as you get older, I think you start to realize how blessed you are to just wake up in the morning. And, you know, we lose people every day that are, you know, our age in this world and younger, because of age-related and health-related, diseases. And I think that you start to realize how much control you have over your well-being, mental and physical, and that it is all, you know, it's all, there's a healthy balance to it all, but you have so much control over your longevity. So, and there are so many things that aren't in your control. So for me, I feel so blessed every single day that I get to wake up and actually try to be healthy. Because it, that, you know, that striving to be healthy gives you more time potentially.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Or at least puts the variables on your side.
Yes. Yes. That is definitely a good way to look at it for sure. And I feel like, you know, for anyone that's ever had their health taken away from them for a short period of time, a long period of time, they'll understand that it's like the foundation of life. If you don't have that, you can't do anything. You can't chase your dreams. You can't, you know, go for that next acting role because you're not looking after yourself or your body's not well, you know, sometimes what you're doing.
No, it's true. Absolutely. You know, when I, right after Battlestar in 2008, got cancer and I was sick for about 2 years and with treatment and surgery and then recovery. And it made me so appreciative of getting older. You know, I'm so excited to turn 40 in 6 months. I can't tell you. The fact that I'm turning 40 is the most beautiful. I'm so excited. Because it means I get to turn 40, you know, and, you know, I've had chronic pain in my life for 15 years. And, there is always a way to flip a negative to a positive. Always. You just have to look for it. And I find sometimes that there is a laziness in our obstacles in life, the things that are potentially against us, the things that we struggle with, you know, sometimes we allow those struggles to take hold instead of realizing that sometimes it's just a shift in perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes what you're touching on is you have to choose it, you know, because sometimes it's so much easier to stay where you are than to to flipping it to the positive sometimes, or to choosing the thing that you know you ought to do, but just feels like a struggle. That sometimes it takes work. It's not always easy.
Change is incredibly hard. You know, it's incredibly hard, whether it's a mental change or a physical change. Change is hard because it's scary. You know, it's very comfortable to stay where you're at. So anyone who's on a journey of change gets my, you know, hats off to you.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So our interview is coming to a close, but before we finish, I have three signature questions that I ask each of my guests at the end.
Okay.
All right. So they're fun. If you weren't in your current career and you could choose anything, what would you like to do?
I'd probably be a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And what do you feel is your greatest asset?
I think the ability to not take myself too seriously.
Awesome. And is there a piece of wisdom that you've acquired through self-experience or that someone's passed down to you over the years that you live by today?
I don't let anybody project what they think my life should be like. You know, so many people have opinions about the way you should live and the things that you should do and the way that things are supposed to look. And I can't let anyone do that for me, because this is my life as it's your life, and everyone listening, it is your life and you only get one. So don't let anyone else live it for you.
Very powerful note to finish our conversation on, really, truly. So thank you so much for chatting with me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you so much, Monica. That was lovely. I appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure.
Yeah, you too.